So I'll call upon our brother Malcolm now to give us his second part of his Bible classes, Jerusalem at the Time of Christ. Brother Malcolm.
If we can sort of darken the place down, Rod, and then as soon as the room's dark, we'll get on with the slides. But in the meantime, when I introduced the first talk, I pointed out to you that the meeting owns this model of the temple, which I have here on the front of the building, and set four sets of slides. And along with those slides are booklets. So there's an enormous amount of very useful information in these, the maps come up, in these books. So I'd recommend that you use it. Meeting owns it. All you have to do is let the ABs know that you've got them so that we don't lose track of them. But by all means, they really should be used, and we should be more familiar with what we've got in this collection. Now, two things that there are there. One is the map. And so I put it up on here, and we'll just go back and forth between the slides when we get them going, and the map of Jerusalem about the time of Christ. This is about the time when Jesus was, about AD 30. This is the temple platform in the side here. There's a little hook in the wall because the wall follows the sort of ridge along the edge of the valley. This is the valley going down here, which is Gethsemane is up in there, and this is the Kidron Brook, which comes down through here, which figures in the time of Jesus and the down here, Pool of Siloam, the southern wall. Up this way, there's large palaces here. This area of the city developed at the time when the when Jesus was coming back and forth, when his family would be going back and forth. This is the palace that was built by the Maccabees. So this section of the city really goes back to the time of King David. The pool here at the bottom here was built by Hezekiah. So that goes back a long way in time. The city gradually extended in this direction and up onto this hill here. But when the Maccabees took over in about 140 B.C., then they really extended the city in this direction. Herod built the rest of it here, and what we call nowadays infill development. There were a whole series of other houses built up in that top left-hand corner. Now, last time we went over the temple in the whole talk, so I want to go quickly over this model of the temple again, just to sort of start out from where we left off last time. This is the holy place in the background. The orientation of the temple is, if you draw this line straight through the holy place, out through the doorway, you come to the height of land of the Mount of Olives. So you people would all be standing on the Mount of Olives. The Court of the Women here, this area out here is the original temple platform, which was built in the time of Zerubbabel, the time of Solomon, reinforced in the time of Zerubbabel, and again was extended slightly. You notice this line here was extended by the Maccabees to that point, and then Herod extended it even further and built this large courtyard on the far side here. The Court of the Women, of course, there was the place for the offerings taken around here, so the widow's mite story took place in there. There's a little courtyard, steps on the side here and along here. And it was there that the priests would come out on feast days to explain the law to the people. So it was on these steps through here that Jesus would have been discussing things with the priests in the temple. You remember when his parents lost him, when they were on their way to Galilee and realized that he wasn't with them. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. The priests themselves would enter through a gate on the side, come in an underground passageway up here, and then directly into the holy area. This area, which was the original temple site, was considered to be holy by the Jews. Outside that was the court of the Gentiles, and it's entirely possible then, and that then was not holy, It's entirely possible then that it was in this area here that the commerce took place. You remember the temples, the tables of the money changers and so on, which were set up. This stoa was a perennial marketplace. The Sanhedrin met in this end of the stoa. And I guess that's just about all. This is the Antonia Fortress, of course, built for the Roman garrison, which overlooked the city and made sure there was no Jewish insurrection. Now, this is one of my slides, and we showed it to you last time. I show it to you just so you can get an idea of the scale. The height of this platform here is the height, with very few exceptions, of the original temple platform when Herod, at the time of Herod. So that would have been the level that Jesus walked on. The dome is directly above the height of Mount Moriah, which was the place where Abraham took Isaac to be sacrificed and where later Solomon constructed the temple over that site. So this dome marks the point where the temple once stood. And the point to think about now is this height from here to there. Because that height is about one-third of the height from here to the top of the temple when Solomon built it and when Herod reconstructed it. And Herod, of course, overlaid it with gold so that in the morning sunlight, particularly the sun would rise behind me in the east, it would really gleam. Now, the other thing that Herod did was reinforce the water supply in the city of Jerusalem. There were 15 different major pools to supply water in the city that Herod developed. This one is right beside the Antonia Fortress, so it's immediately to the north of the temple compound, and that's the way it appears today. We were down in there about 20 years ago, had another look, and that water is clear. During the Six-Day War, this cistern supplied water for the defenders of Jerusalem. In the time of the Romans, this was the water supply that the defenders used when the Romans conquered the city in 66 AD. And it's been there ever since the time of Herod, and it's still there, and still good water. Now, we're working our way around the temple, because the point that I want to emphasize here particularly is that the temple, although it was situated up here on the side, was the center of everything that went on in Jewish life at the time. So this area here is that corner there. And if you look on this little map, this little reconstruction, you can see these little doorways, little openings all along there. They were shops. And along here, at this end of the stoa, they were shops. At that end was where the Sanhedrin met. All through this area here, which was part of the court of the Gentiles, and extended back into there, would have been the tables of the money changers and such like. You know, the commercial enterprise of the temple went on there. And outside the temple was the shopping district. So, you see, we have this image of the temple, as it were. These are the remains in through here and down in through there of those early buildings, those early shops. So we have this image of the temple as being a place of worship. But it was more than that. It was the hillside shopping center for the city of Jerusalem at the time when Jesus was there. Now, it was a religious center. If so, it was the cultural center of the town. It was the shopping district for the city. But also, there's two little buildings here. We're now going along the southern wall. These are these two buildings right there. And one of them was the council chamber. So this is where the sort of civic law was dispensed. One of the places, there were three of them. We'll pick up at least one of the others. At the time of Josephus, there were three of these council chambers in Jerusalem and in use. So the Sanhedrin met here. The Supreme Court met at this end of that stoa, down there. Civil matters were handled here and in a little building there that we know of for sure, and there was a third one somewhere that we do not know about. But the thing you, the picture that you should be getting is that the temple wasn't just about religion. It was about every facet of Jewish life. The other thing to consider is this big open space in through here. Now, these were two palaces. They're both built during the Maccabean period. And notice this road coming down the side, stores along the side, and the road extends further on down. That's this road here. It extended all the way out to the Damascus Gate and then went out to the north, came all the way down the side, down to the Pool of Siloam, which was at that point. So this broad area here and that broad expanse there is what you're looking at in this line drawing. So you see, the temple was a religious center. It was their cultural center. It was their commercial center. It was their legal center. It was their governmental center. And it was the place, the one of the few places where you could go if you could find some open space where you could sit on the steps and talk to a friend in the sun. So it was one of the few places where you could go, as it were, if you wanted to go to a park, as we may say nowadays, for a little rest and relaxation. The temple had all of those aspects to its existence at the time of Jesus. And as you can see from this drawing, it was a very elaborate, very ornate, very expansive, and well-developed structure. It impressed people. Wall came on down here. That's this wall here. And we're now going to just sort of look at that area again and then come down and look at this part of Jerusalem as it has existed since the time of King David. The Jebusite city, of course, sat more or less on this same hill. And one of the reasons that it did, if you see that tower there, we're going to pick up the ruins of that tower shortly. That was built in the Maccabean period. It's directly above the spring Gihon. And that water from that spring was then taken in an S-shaped tunnel down to the pool Siloam in the time of Hezekiah. The archaeologists feel that the miners probably followed a fault in the rock, and that was the way they managed to develop the S-shaped tower. Now, I've got a question for you. This, of course, isn't Jerusalem. I don't know how many of you recognize it. It's Mexico City. This is a cathedral in Mexico City. It's the courtyard in a cathedral in Mexico City. Now, when we were there, in the middle of the night, there was a sort of a sound, lots of people walking by, and we didn't know what was going on. But we were assured by our hosts that what was happening was that all these people were going on a pilgrimage. There were thousands of them. You know, they stretched just like these great Miles for Millions type marches and runs that we have nowadays in our cities. Hundreds and thousands of people just walking down the street. And what they did was they set up, and these people in Mexico City who had come down to see the effigy, which was there of the Virgin Mary, in this particular cathedral, they set up house on the temple courtyard. So one of the questions that's always been in my mind is, what happened in the time of Jesus? What went on when Jesus' family went there? There weren't enough rooms in the city to support all the people that went there. Some of them must have camped out in the open. And that was probably one of the main functions and one of the reasons that Herod developed this large open space. Because I doubt that anybody would have been allowed to camp in that area if they were not willing to pay a substantial rent to the high priest. There are all kinds of things written in Josephus about the way the priests used every facet of their operation to make money. And we'll see where some of that money went in a little while. But there, as in Mexico City, and there was the sort of thing, I mean, this is one family's possessions. And all the members would carry something and put them in bags, stick it on your back, and away you go. Some of them had little carts, and off they went. Now, the other thing is this: there's two lines here you can see. This is another facet of temple worship at the time of Jesus. We were Western, you know, North American tourists, and we were in this line, and so we zipped on through, and unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, we couldn't see any tears in the face of this statue of Mary, which we went in to see. But all the local people who had come or walked for miles to get there all walked along slowly, and they stood for a long time looking up at that statue. I mean, for me it was interesting, but I couldn't see anything special in it, but they did. Two lines. They're the favored group, and there are those who had to take their time and didn't get any special treatment. And we can see aspects of that in the time of Jesus many times in the architecture of that city. There is definitely a two-class system at the time of Jesus. And so there were no doubt people whose sacrifices didn't get taken as readily, and those who were shuffled through, yeah, nice to see you again, Dr. So-and-so, you know, that sort of treatment. Well, here's a line drawing by Lynn Rittmeyer, who developed this whole series of slides, which identifies the items that they know for certain. The temple, there's a lot of information about the temple. Herod's walls are well known. The towers, there's another tower here and one there, which the foundations are there. This is one of the ones that we showed you. That's the tower above the spring. Another tower, gateway down here. Pool of Siloam, that one is well established. There's an inscription stone which was found in that pool, which is now in a museum at Istanbul. items outside the walls. The location of the wall is reasonably well known. When you get around here to the Essenes Gate, it's known quite well. There's another little pool in here, the Serpent's Pool, which we'll show you a part of later. This was the wall built by Herod. Herod's palace was in here. Three towers, and we'll look at those in some detail in a minute. It's interesting, this one was named for one of his friends who was killed in battle. Faisal was, but Mariam is a very interesting name for a tower. That was Herod's wife. The interesting thing about this particular wife was that he decided a little later on to have her murdered. So, but he immortalized her in a tower before he got rid of her. Then this gate has been established, the Gennath Gate. And the wall went out that. And so it was out in this area here, outside the gate, that the crucifixion took place. this palace, there's no evidence of it physically, but from writings, it's pretty evident that it was in that location. That's this building here, built by the Maccabees. In here was an exercise court, council house, just beyond it. Remains of a mansion, which we'll show you later. That's a very interesting one. And there have been one or two other houses. This is the house of Caiaphas. Now, the reason that I had that particular section read, if you read the words in verse 58 very carefully, it says he was taken to Caiaphas in the house of the high priest. What happened, more than likely, was that Jesus was taken into that mansion there. And we'll show you details of that later. Gethsemane is over here. He would not have been taken through the temple. He would have been brought to the south, possibly through this gate here, or maybe all the way around the north, because there's the Antonia Fortress where Pilate was. He would have been taken over here, taken to Herod and to the high priest in there, and to Pilate in the Antonia Fortress, and then outside the city in this area for crucifixion. So it was a long night for Jesus, going back and forth between all of these individuals. Pool of Bethesda is up here. We're going to talk about that and more. That's the pool that I showed you, the Struthian pool beneath the thing, just beside the Antonia Fortress. Large pool in here, which was, they feel, was constructed specifically for the building materials that they needed, the plasters and so forth, that was used in the construction of the temple. So, we're looking now from an area somewhere up there, looking back into this area here. That dome is over this point, that golden dome. This is the East Gate. which is not really marked, but it's just above that line there. And we're going to go in this direction. But before we do, just notice the height of land behind you. And that's this area through here. And the reason this area developed, and was developed in the time of the Maccabees, firstly, and really extended in the time of Herod, and then this wall along here was developed by Agrippa because the city got out beyond that point. So this wall was built between about 40 and 60 AD, and then the Romans destroyed it in about 66 AD. But notice the height of the land. Now, there's one of the Psalms. John was talking about the Psalms, and the Psalms, of course, were very much part of temple worship. But there's in our hymn book, the Psalm reads, "Round about Jerusalem, the towering mountains stand." Well, I mean, they're not towering, but that hill is higher than this. You can see it quite clearly. And if you realize where you're standing from, with the angle that you can look down and see that flat area there, you realize that the Mount of Olives is also higher than the Mount Moriah, which was the height where Abraham took Isaac to be sacrificed. And Mount Scopus comes further out this way, which again is a height of land. And it was from Mount Scopus that the Romans looked down on the city and came across that low area through the foss to invade Jerusalem. So surrounded by hills, behind there, because it was higher, and nice breezes, a very nice area to live in. And now we're going to go in this way. See, here's the extension. This is the edge. That's the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is the edge now, the southern edge of the temple platform, which is this area here. Now keep on going. This is the southern wall from there to there, which is from there to there. And we're looking at this corner here. Is some of the steps, and you see the way the steps develop down. The streets were on flat areas with a riser, and then up again another riser. The city of David extended down, sloping down the hill in this direction. So that piece that you're looking at is all this area through here, which was the city of David. And it was a regular rabbit warren in comparison to the other areas, which we'll see shortly. Now, okay, so this piece here was the city, the way David developed it. This was essentially the Jebusite city. David fortified it, and David then purchased area to this north of there, the threshing floor of Araunah. In these booklets that I have concerning the temple, there's a sound argument that the threshing floor of Araunah was right there just in front of the temple, so it was fairly close to the area where the sacrifices took place. And the city of David, Solomon extended it north of the temple platform, and then these walls were developed by the Hasmoneans, by the Maccabeans. Herod extended the wall right round in the red line. So the city gradually grew. It gradually grew from something like this, the time of David, to something like that when Solomon was finished, and extended just with a few buildings out in this area here until the time when the Maccabees came and expanded the city in this direction and down in through here. And then Herod expanded it to the area that you see in the slide. Herod, of course, died in 4 BC, so he never saw the results of his work. But the plan that he had in place was kept going and was completed. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that this city became, in the lifetime of the apostles, a very meaningless little mix of buildings like this. I mean, just look at the size of these things. I mean, most of these buildings were something about maybe 15 feet square at the most. And the reason for that was that they had to construct a roof. And they made their roofs out of poles and then, thatched them over with different things and then put some sort of clay layer on top to shed the water. So building a roof was a problem, and you had to have a lot of money to be able to afford a substantial roof and a big structure. So we go from tiny little places like that with a few, more substantial footings here and there. These two palaces, one there and one there, which were built during the Maccabean period, to, a real rabbit warren like that. This slide was taken in the 70s in Jerusalem, and the old city is just exactly this way to this day, and there are streets and hawkers and all sorts of things in little doorways, and the streets in some cases are no more than 5 or 6 feet wide, and 10 feet wide is a big street, 20 feet wide is a highway. And they get these tiny little three-wheel vehicles, and the narrow things like these new smart cars that we see out here. That's the sort of transportation, if you have any motorized transportation in those areas. But in for a place like this, most of it is brought in by hand. Now, so just the point to that is to remember that this area here and much of the city itself was a real rabbit warren. Space and wide streets were a real luxury, and openings like this, openings where the plazas and a big plaza in front of Herod's palace here were a real luxury and reserved only for people with power and influence. We're going to move our way on down this wall here. We're looking at that tower there, if I remember correctly. This is the footing for that tower. So just sort of look at the masonry and realize again that all these little walls was where somebody lived. At the end, Pool of Siloam, which they talk about in the scriptures, is here. Beyond that, there was a dam which formed part of the city wall. That's the dam that you're looking at here, reconstruction of that dam. And a large pool to store water in behind. And the cloistered pool of Siloam, which we read about in the New Testament, is at that point here. Here it is today. We have a slide which I didn't bother to look up with some faces that you probably recognize on it, doing the same thing. You can walk through here, walk through the tunnel, come out, and walk up the stairs. It's quite interesting. When we went through, the water was just about up to our waist and flowing through. It's not potable anymore. I don't know whether that's because too many people wade in it or not, but there it is. And this is the Pool of Siloam, cloistered. This was a typical type of construction in the Greco-Roman period. The capitals, we'll see some of these, and the bases for their pillars. Everything was set very elaborately, very ornately. Beautiful joinery and very carefully finished interiors. This is this street with steps. You see, a step up and a run, a riser and a run. That's the street which runs up along here, up here, goes all the way through and ends up at the Damascus Gate. Now we're going to go outside the city into the bottom of this valley here. And at the time of Jesus, this was, there had been tombs in that area, really from the time of the kings. People had been buried just outside the city down further. And you recall that you get back up into this area, Gethsemane is up in that area. So this is Brook Kedron coming on down through here. And so this valley, was the site of a large number of tombs. If you turn around and look up, the Temple Mount is up in here. You can just see the top of one of the domes. And the Mount of Olives on this side. And this is the creek. This is the brook which we have in one of our hymns, beyond where Kedron's waters flow. Well, That's what it looks like, what Kedron's waters look like nowadays. It's not very appealing. Three tombs here, all of which date back from the Greek period, even though one of them is called the Tomb of Hezekiah. They're not quite that old. But it gives you some idea of what was in that valley years ago. This is the remains of a tomb. This whole structure, you see the stonework, stone walls in here, big archway in there. That's all that remains of a very substantial tomb which the archaeologists reconstruct to look like that. Three doors to going into the chapel area of this tomb. And so the reasoning is that because there were three doors, and because those three doors mirror the three doors into the temple platform there, that this was probably the tomb of a senior priest. Now, dating the tomb then, it's reasonable to presume that this was the tomb of Annas. It was white limestone, elaborate columns, very fine masonry. So when Jesus talked about whited sepulchres and such like, you can see the relationship that was there between the priests, where they wanted to be buried, and what Jesus thought of them in their life at this point, and what Jesus thought of their values, which they took with them over into the point of their time of their death. When you think of that, and you think that there were many tombs, that was one of them, certainly one of the most elaborate, but there were hundreds of tombs which were constructed, and this tomb itself, that area there, was bigger than the average individual's house in square footage. The place where, in here, where the high priest was laid to rest, was larger than the average individual's household. So the sense of values, the relative, the difference between them was really extreme. We've come along this wall now and we're into this flat area here. In this day, this is used as a concert area, but in the time of Jesus it was known, I can't recall what it was known as in the time of Jesus, I've forgotten. But it became known as the Sultan's Pool because in the Turkish period, it was reinforced and redeveloped. And the stream, the surface water was collected coming down this valley from the side of the city, coming down through here, surface water was collected, and it was held. It's a form of water storage which is practiced a great deal through the Middle East. They have low dams, maybe two of them, and because of the soil surface, when you get a rain, it sits on the top and flows on down very quickly and collects in there. There was also a spring way to the south in Bethlehem, which was tapped and ran along and fed this pool as well. So water was a very big thing in the time of Herod. And it was that that really made... We're coming around here now up onto this wall. And so... Herod did several things. He really built a major cosmopolitan city. There was trade because the Maccabees had made an arrangement with the Romans. That political alliance brought trade into the city. Also, having a Roman garrison there, I mean, those guys had money to spend. There was money in the city now. And there were olives, there were produce there, and there were things which came from further inland, which came through this general area and moved on. A merchant class was developing. The city then had a richer substructure, much more so than it had had in previous years. It was a wealthy city. It was built of, being very recently built, so it was new. All the limestone really... And the sandstones really shone in the sunlight. So it was an impressive city. And it had tourists that came to it because of that. Not just the Jewish people that came, the sort of groups that we showed you that would have to camp in front of the temple with their belongings. But there were also tourists that came to see what Herod had done, because the magnificence of this city was known throughout the Roman world. So we're now coming along here in front of where Herod's palace sat, and we're looking at what are really Crusader reconstructions. But down below, there is Maccabean masonry, and further on down here, which is not clear on the slide, there is Herodian masonry, which still survives in small quantities. But when you see those crenellated walls, they're either Crusader or Turkish. This is what the ruins of this area through here look like today. The foundations, and you see the massive stones which were here, which were foundations for the three towers which Herod built to fortify, and, you know, with a garrison of troops in there, that would strengthen his position in this, his temple, with that nice courtyard with trees and such like. Josephus describes all of this in some detail. It's a very elegant place where Herod lived. The base of the tower that Herod built and named for the wife that he had murdered. And there's a reconstruction of what it would have looked like at the time when Herod built it. The Hippicus Tower, the largest one, built for one of his heroes, the Phaseal, and Mariam, named after his wife. The garrison, troops there, and Herod had his own personal bodyguard. And then Herod's palace was just around the corner and attached to it in that area there. So already you begin to see the two-class structure, which is here, and the difference in values between the people that Jesus dealt with on a daily basis and those that sat there on top of them, on top of the power structure. Now, the thing to notice here are the lines, and of course with the individual there, this is something that Josie criticizes me for every time I take slides. I don't get anybody on it, so you can tell the scale. But there's our paving stones. And those paving stones come from an area in here. So it gives you some idea of what went on in the Maccabean palace, and that was the palace that guests were put up at in the time of Jesus. And that was the palace where Herod and his part of his family lived while they were building Herod's later palace. And that was the palace then where Roman visitors, Roman governors would get their accommodation. So, once again, the dignitaries had a first-class existence. The ordinary people came in, probably camped on the street, the way you saw those pilgrims to the cathedral in Mexico City. The ordinary people lived in little houses where you get two houses on a space the size of this platform. We're now going to step into the house of someone very different. You can see the column bases, just get some idea of the masonry which was there in the foundation and the footing for this place. Go on to the next slide and you get a notion of what this particular house looked like. Now, this house comprised about 6,500 square feet of living area. In contrast to houses which were 150 square feet, 200, maybe a little over 200 feet, if they were very lucky, of a living space, this house had 6,500 square feet of space, which was finished like that, with mosaics on the floor, large amphora to store wine, water, whatever in, and areas to greet your guests. The colonnades from that house were finished this way, with the capitals on the top of the pillars, bases to the pillars, elaborately carved finishings, and that's what it looks like. 6,500 square feet of living space. And a large reception room. Now, as I indicated to you when we started, Jesus was taken to Caiaphas in the house of the high priest. Now, this is what the walls were finished like. You can see the plaster, surviving plaster. See the lines worked into the plaster. This section of wall was survived, the destruction of the house. And that's the way the first century plasterers finished the inside of one of these rooms. There are pieces remaining that were picked up, you know, from the rubble and put together and a pattern worked out for the way the plastering was done. And those are the pieces that were survived and the way, and that then is the way it is constructed to feel that the room existed at the time of Jesus. It was probably into this room that Jesus was taken in that section that was read to us this evening. Taken into the high priest's, the palace of the high priest, as it says in verse 58. And there he would have been confronted by Caiaphas. 6,500 square feet of living space and a reception room which was 20 feet long by 30 feet wide. The house was completely destroyed, and this is by the Romans when they overtook the city in 66 AD. And that's some of the rubble which was left and the evidence of burning there. And now we're going to move on. So we've seen places where ordinary people lived in very small accommodations. The high priest's house is that one. No, it's not. Yes, it is. It's that one. Mm-hmm. And we're now going to look at this area here, just beyond that high priest's palace. Now, the other thing to notice is this road here. And that little bridge which went over into the temple. Little gate right on the side there to nip in, and then you're right into the temple itself. Not just the courtyard, which surrounded the temple, but right into the temple itself. This was a shortcut. When I was in Ottawa, we had deputy minister that was on the 19th floor, and he had a key, so that when he came in on the main floor, he could just stick his key in the elevator, and he went zip straight up to the 19th floor. Well, us peons had to, go up a floor at a time if somebody else wanted the elevator. Well, that's what the high priest did. You see, they were right close. They just nip into the temple. And what they did then was get dressed first thing in the morning and walk along here in all their finery so that everybody could see them that was nearby and people that were shopping in these streets here and see them go into the temple. And the worship of the day would start. And as we showed you last week, there was a stone up here on this corner where a trumpeter would stand, and when the high priests had then gone in, trumpet would sound and the temple worship was about to start. It was a very elaborate, a very ornate, and a very pompous operation that they were carrying out. So all of these little things that we read, and and Jesus says you take tithes of everything down to the finest herbs, yet what you're really concerned about is your existence rather than the way the people themselves should be. Now, that courtyard that you're looking at is in this general area here. The Wailing Wall is just beyond it, just up. You see, here's the dome here. The Wailing Wall is that's just in front of the Wailing Wall, that particular courtyard. There's two buildings that they feel were in that general area. One of them was an exercise court, this open space here. Now, that court had shrunk in size. During the Greek period, the court was used extensively for daily exercises. And daily exercises became more of a ritual than what went on in the temple. And that was one of the reasons that the Maccabees were so successful when they came back into Jerusalem. They reversed a lot of those practices which had been going on. But there was still this exercise course there, and then one of the council houses in this area here. So they have a council house there, which went, some of the minor legal proceedings went on. Council house here, again, which civil and legal proceedings took place. And where the third one was that Josephus mentions, people don't seem to know. And that's the reconstruction. This The remains of that council house, the one that's right beside the West Wall, were discovered in the mid-1800s, and they were named the Masonic Lodge because one of the individuals that was digging was related to the Masons, and it sure certainly reminded him of Masonic structures. But that's an idea, again, of the opulence of all of the civic buildings which were there in the time of Herod. Buildings that impressed the disciples. Buildings that impressed the rest of the world. And buildings which must have led the Jews, to think that they really were something special and encourage the insurrection that took place against the Romans. So all of these factors were seething in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus. Yeah, okay. Now we're going to go up into this area here. There's some pools that are called Bethesda in the New Testament. And there's remains of them. And more interesting to you probably are the architectural drawings. Now, the interesting thing is that these were, again, Herodian construction. You see the ornate pillars around them, the nice tile roof, which was very Roman, and pools of water, which were there to store water for the city. This was one of the ways that Jerusalem was very, very fortunate, much more so than many other cities throughout the Middle East. Herod had developed a massive series of waterworks. These pools were huge. It's 50 feet deep, 160 or 70 feet long, I forget the actual measurement, and 60, 70 feet wide, but 50 feet deep. So when you read that the sick were waiting for the angel to disturb the waters so that they could step into them, it's quite obvious that they weren't going to step into those particular pools. But in behind, there's a little shrine and several little rock-cut pools. Water is collected in this whole area, and some of it is piped off into those little pools there. Now, this shrine, all through, when you come from the time when Malachi was written, the time that it says there shall be a famine for the word of the Lord, and realize what happened in Israel in that intervening period from the time when Malachi was born to the time when the Maccabees arrived in 140 BC, you realize that there really was, when you look at the archaeology of the site, really was a famine for the word of the Lord. This little shrine had been in operation for several hundred years at that time, and it was to one of the pagan gods, but it was one of the gods that was associated with healing. So the concept was there from profane sources that that site was there for the benefit of those who needed to be healed. And the shrine to the god was in that little structure. But the people who were waiting for the angel to come down and disturb the water must have been waiting in this area through here, possibly in this portico, who knows. But certainly waiting for one of those smaller pools to be disturbed, because the others were far too deep and the sides just went straight down. Somebody that had a handicap who ended up in them would have serious problem. Now, we're just going to go very quickly back again to the events that we read about in Matthew in our reading. This is the... there are three Christian denominations which own land where this church is built. They're three separate churches, and you get to them all through this one portico and go from one individual where the priests are dressed one way into another. And this is probably, this is the most probable real site for the crucifixion and the place where Jesus was born. At the time when Jesus was on the earth, this was outside the city wall, just down in this sort of left-hand corner. But nowadays, it's well within the structure of the city as a whole. The other site, which is more interesting for Protestants, is this one. This is an Arab bus station just here now. Life goes on in the land, and life went on at the time when Jesus was crucified. Remember, they just cast lots at his feet for his possessions. Life went on, and just because one guy was dying, it was no big deal. But this, then, was looked on as a possible place for the skull. And there's other discussions that the way the rock formations went, you could see the outline of a body going down the hill. So it was felt that this is possibly the site of the skull and the more pleasant site. This is a tomb that dates from a little earlier, actually, than the time of Jesus. but definitely a tomb. And quite interestingly, one the way you can go and sort of sit and remember and just think about what happened to Jesus in those last moments. It's a peaceful place, a quiet place, rather than the bustling amphitheater that the other slide showed. This is Gethsemane. That's the church over the area where the which is the probable site of the Garden of Gethsemane. And this, now, the East Gate is there. So we've gone across this, and we're just up in that area there. So, olive trees in here, Gethsemane, Mount of Olives in the background. So the temple axis, looking straight through there, arrives at a high point somewhere in here. There's an hotel there. We stayed in the hotel on that Mount of Olives on our first trip to Israel. It's an interesting experience to get up early and look down on Jerusalem from the height of the Mount of Olives. If you sit in Gethsemane and look up, you're looking up at the East Gate, which is in this area here, and the temple, site of the temple there. And to see the olives and see the garden, to see the trees, and to think about where you are. So, this is the last slide. I just want to sort of recap things a little bit. To emphasize that we're looking now, this is this door. So this is this corner here. Those steps are these steps. And that temple is this area right there. To recap. So the temple was the center of everything. These large open spaces must have been used by pilgrims to camp out in. I really don't know where else they would have gone except into these open spaces when they came for the feast days in Jerusalem. Stores along here. This is where you bought your supplies. These were everything, shoes. There are remains in there from lamps, from shoes, from oils and so forth. So if you needed olive oil or anything, somebody along there would get it. There were leather workers, cloth merchants. There's everything, evidence of all of those domestic requirements in the stores along here. These are the steps going up and the way into the temple here. The long store, merchandising area here. Sanhedrin met at the far end, so the Supreme Court of Israel at the time of Jesus met right there in the temple. Council chamber just off in the south side, and another one off just in front of this archway here. So civic matters were handled there. The temple itself was a meeting place, a physical meeting place. There was opportunity to buy the things you needed for temple worship just inside there. This is this portico, which I mentioned earlier, where the priests would come out to talk the matters of the law. And so it's probably on those porticos that Jesus encountered the high priest when he was just a young lad. The holy place is here. The courtyard where the sacrifices took place there, court of the women in front of that. The treasury for the temple, the major offerings in the court of the women. These cloistered areas along here were where the supplies were kept for temple worship. So the way the city was structured, you look at its gate, you lead into there. There's another gate up here. and lead into the area of the temple. Southern area, there's a gate there. Come in and out. This gate. This gate here, the Skenath gate, into the temple. This gate into a walkway. Everything went in. The temple was the center of life and everything that they did. It was central to their worship. It was central to their commerce. It was central to their social lives. It was a space for them to meet. And it was the focal point of their whole existence. Massive structures which were out here were evidence of the wealth that was in that area. This was a rich business class. In the time of the Maccabees, there were just a few houses in there. In the time of Herod, there were many more. And they were all built around courtyards so that although the houses were close together, there were lots of space inside them for you to just sit and enjoy the sun and enjoy figs or whatever you had on your trees. It was a city where there was wealth. But it was also a city where there were very much two classes of people. There were those that had and those that had not. And the interesting thing, I think, is for us to see the number of times when Jesus spoke with those who didn't have so much. Well, thanks very much, and turn the lights back on.